Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I am your host, Scott White, and I am being joined again by one Miss, I'm joined by Meredith Nudo.
You can say Miss. That's
okay.
Technically correct.
I didn't want to assume anything.
It's fine. Miss is fine. Mix is fine. Like, both of those are okay, but I have no, just don't call me Mister. I'm not Mister. I'm not offended if you call me Mister. But it doesn't fit.
I could call you Mr. Mister, and then we'd be back in the 80s.
Like the Ghostbusters cartoon.
Like the... Oh!
Oh! Look at that segue!
Holy! I feel like Daniel in The Karate Kid. You took out my legs with that segue. Wow. If you've listened to this podcast, you know I have... Whenever we're talking about something about Ghostbusters, I have Meredith on the show. We are talking about the cartoon The Real Ghostbusters, and its connection is it's based on the characters created by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. So this falls under the category, under the umbrella of the Dan Aykroyd Podcast, because the cartoon is based on the characters he created along with Harold Ramis.
I feel like you're just buying time and making me do all of these Ghostbusters ones before letting me do the actual Ghostbusters.
If I let you do the original
if
Ghostbusters.
If you let me do the original Ghostbusters.
That's right.
I have a vague idea of whereabouts you live, just so you know.
Most people have a vague idea.
Yeah, I know the area in which to wander around waiting.
So we're doing the pilot episode of The Real Ghostbusters, the cartoon based on the movies. But before we get into that, I'd like to go through sort of the Ghostbusters timeline. In 1975, there was a live-action kid show called Ghostbusters. And that starred Larry Storch and Forrest Tucker from F Troop fame. And it was two guys, and they had a pet ape, or actually the ape was their partner. And they had machines that would, like the traps in the Ghostbusters movies. They had one of those that they used in that, and that lasted for a year. That lasted from 70, it was either 74 to 75 or 75 to 76. Then the Ghostbusters came out in 1984, and there was actually a lawsuit or something. I'm not going to get into it, but they had to jump through hoops to get the name since it was already used. Then in 1986, the Real Ghostbusters cartoon based on the movie came out, and then the cartoon Ghostbusters based on the 75 TV show came out within a week of each other.
What? I didn't know that part. Real Ghostbusters makes it sound like a documentary.
It does, yes. Something that you'd see on A&E. And then I believe in 1998 there was another cartoon called The Ultimate Ghostbusters.
Extreme Ghostbusters.
Extreme yes. Ghostbusters, thank you. And the only returning character was Egon, and everybody else was the children of Ray and Venkman and Winston. Through a series of emails, Meredith let me know that in Extreme Ghostbusters, it was not the offspring of the original Ghostbusters, but college students brought on to carry on the legacy of the Ghostbusters led by Egon. So that's the timeline with the Ghostbusters cartoons, TV shows, and movies. And when we did Ghostbusters 2, you said that you grew up on The Real Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
This was your cartoon.
I watched it in syndication as a kid because I was too young when it started to have watched it. So when it was in reruns in the late 80s, early 90s, that was my first exposure to Ghostbusters, the real Ghostbusters, the Aykroyd-verse Ghostbusters, as you will. So that was my introduction to all the characters. I was obviously very surprised to find out that Egon wasn't a blonde when I saw the movie.
And that Ray wasn't a redhead.
Yeah, yeah. But mostly Egon was not a blonde. That was the starkest difference. They also had less Slimer in the movie, which is a good thing.
We're going to talk about Slimer later.
Very good thing.
But not only did Egon have blonde hair, he had a rat tail. He had a big pompadour in the cartoon. He had a big pompadour in front, and then he had this rat tail in the back. And
yeah, that was a very 80s hairstyle, though, wasn't it?
It was a very 80s hairstyle. The cartoon is very 80s. I mean, it 86, so it's smack dab in the middle of the 80s. When this, even catchphrases, like during the cartoon, Peter Venkman uses the catchphrase, "You look marvelous," was made famous by Billy Crystal on Saturday Night Live in the 80s. So it's very, very 80s.
Yeah, and see, that's not something I probably would have picked up on.
No, that would have been for the adults. This cartoon is one of those that rides the line. It has stuff for both children and adults.
Well, my dad did watch this with us. My brother and I had some of the action figures. Mm-hmm. They used to cross over with the Ninja Turtles several times on our carpet.
Oh, I thought there was a cartoon. I would watch a Ghostbusters Ninja Turtle crossover.
I'm sure it has probably happened in the IDW comics at some point since they own both properties.
Oh, that's right, they do.
Yeah, I just have not read them because I would have to figure out where number one started, because comics always have a bad habit of relaunching titles at different numberings, so I would have to figure out what the timeline would be for it to pick it up if it tied in with anything else. But it would not surprise me if there was a crossover, and I'm sure it would be very good. IDW's Ghostbusters comics, I talk very highly about them for a reason.
I did a podcast on the because last time we did it, you said, have you ever read the IDW? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, I'm an idiot. Yes, I have. I actually did a podcast on those comics.
Yeah, they were very good.
When you get done with this podcast, we also did Ghostbusters 2, and we also did Casper, which has Dan Aykroyd as a cameo as Ray Stantz.
With a mustache.
With a killer porn 70s mustache.
Although yeah. I think we spent more of that episode talking about Eric Idle.
Eric Idle. Yes, Eric Idle.
So is your next project, after you finish up everything with Dan Aykroyd, would you do the Eric Idle podcast?
Yeah, I could do that. I love Eric. I mean, I love Monty Python. I love Eric Idle.
How could you not? I love Eric Idle, too. Like, how could you not? I would be a guest on that show. Just saying.
Hey, if I did, then I could do European Vacation and Christmas Vacation 2, which also has Eric Idle in both of those.
You're forgetting the most important, the Transformers movie.
The Transformers movie. Orson Welles' final movie. It's weird you bring that up. I was just talking about that the other day with somebody.
Oh, I was talking about it the other day with someone, and I actually ordered a copy of it. So when I get my COVID vaccine, we can have a movie night.
Okay. Okay, so we're getting off track here.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right. So we're reviewing the first episode of The Real Ghostbusters called Ghosts Are Us. It's a family of ghosts. It's the family is sort of like Baby Huey. I don't know. Man, I'm talking about old stuff here. Well, here, there was an old Warner Brothers cartoon where there was a wife and a father and just a big dumb kid. And that's what it is in this cartoon. There's a father and a mother and a big dumb kid.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any of that. Like, I know the name Baby Huey, but whenever I hear it, I think of the cigar chomping baby from Roger Rabbit. But I think he had a different name.
Yes, he did. But Baby Huey was a Disney character. just a big dumb kid.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't have gotten, that's another thing, like the You Look Marvelous, I wouldn't have caught on to that either.
But what they do is they are sending their kid, they're actually recapturing their kid. They send their kid in, they're dressed up as quote unquote humans, and they send their kid into a building, and they're methodically putting the Ghostbusters out of business. By taking all the ghostbusting business away from them.
It's the ghostbusting equivalent of Munchausen by proxy.
Yes. Exactly. So this, the first two seasons, Peter Venkman was voiced by Lorenzo Music. And Winston Zeddemore was voiced by Arsenio Hall. So they had top name voice talent doing
this.
Well,
they also had Frank Welker as Ray.
Frank Welker.
And Maurice LaMarche, also known for doing Orson Welles. So tie yes. back into Transformers talk as Egon. Interestingly enough, Ernie Hudson was the only person from the movie who auditioned to play himself in the cartoon and did not get the part. And that makes me so sad to hear. But at the same time, well, I will say this: voice acting and acting are two completely different skill sets coming from someone who does both. So maybe his voice acting skills weren't quite where they needed them to be. At the same time, that makes me sad. But also, I can't complain because Arsenio Hall is fantastic. So
I agree with you 100%. I never really considered voice acting a talent until I saw Shrek, and Eddie Murphy in Shrek was just like, it just, his performance just blew my mind. So I had to give voice actors a lot more credit after I saw that movie.
Yeah, it's a completely, like, to put things into perspective, Scott, I have an acting coach and I have a voice acting coach because they're such separate skill sets.
To voice actors out there, kudos, because if you're any performer out there, but I just want to give voice actors, I want to give them the props that they deserve, because it is a talent.
Thank you.
It is a talent, like you said, it's a talent that not everybody has.
Thank you, Scott. Kudos fully accepted. I will not share with other voice actors.
Yes. Don't share those. So Lorenzo Music, who was known, and we're going back, he was known as Carlton the Doorman in the 70s on Rhoda, and he was also the voice of Garfield.
Which is how I first knew of him, obviously.
Which Bill Murray voiced in the live-action movies. We're having a whole lot of connections here.
Yeah, I remember Bill Murray was not happy with Lorenzo Music's performance as Venkman. He thought that he sounded too much like Garfield.
Well, he did. And I would say that Frank Welker as Ray sounded a little too much like Fred from Scooby-Doo. Because whenever I heard his voice, that's what I heard. I heard Fred from Scooby-Doo.
But you know what? It worked. I wasn't going to expect him to just sit in there and be like, "Hey, everyone, I'm Ray." Anyone want to drink some Molson on top of a moose and play hacky?
A bottle of Goldskin Moleskine? Yes.
Yeah, let's just start blaring Rush while we're at it.
What's that all about?
There we go. I just defended an entire country in less than a minute.
But eventually, Lorenzo Music was replaced by Dave Coulier of Full House fame as Peter Venkman.
Yeah, I still liked Lorenzo Music better.
I didn't see a lot. I was going to ask you that.
No, I liked Lorenzo Music better. Because, yeah, of course he sounded like Garfield. That was his regular speaking voice. That's how he talked when he was Carlton the Doorman. Because, I mean, I had Nick at Night, so I saw some episodes of Rhoda, and I remember thinking, oh my God, that's Garfield.
There's like people like Lorenzo Music who just has that voice. Another example is Adam West. Whenever Adam West did voice work, it was Adam West's voice. Then there's people like Billy West and, I'm sorry, what's Maurice's last name?
Maurice LaMarche.
They do voices. They do different voices. They do different characters. But then there's some people who just have a very distinct voice that, you know, they don't do voices. It's just their voice. So if you hire that person, that's the voice you're going to get.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing, though. I still think he was a great Venkman. Yeah, okay, it was the same voice as Garfield, but who cares? It's not necessarily about the sound. It's the way you do the actual characterization, and he nailed the... I mean, he's the smart-ass character. That's Venkman's role in the movie, and then they had to obviously soften him down for a children's show. So they took out most of the, you know, the lewdness, but the smartassery remained, and he nailed it. I thought he was great in the role.
Yes, out of all the things I didn't like about this cartoon, none of the performances from the actors, the voice actors, was one of it.
Oh, they were all fantastic. And I do quite like Arsenio Hall as Winston. I know that Winston is very much the straight man role, but it was very obvious that he was having so much fun.
And just another weird tie-in, Dave Coulier and Bill Murray have the same birthday.
Oh, man. This is some of that Kennedy-Lincoln connection
right.
stuff. Woo.
So before we did this podcast, we emailed back and forth, and as you put it, it's fucking Slimer.
Oh, my God.
The Slimer is very, very prominent in what was... Okay, I'll admit, I've only seen a handful of these cartoons. I take it Slimer is prominent through the whole series?
Yeah, he's the alleged comedy relief sidekick, but he's not comedy or relief at all.
No.
He's just a nuisance. I want to say at one point he released the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, which of course I'm not going to complain about because I love the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Like, I love the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man so much. But Slimer is a liability?
Well, he is, because in this cartoon, the Ghostbusters capture the family of ghosts, and then Slimer, you know, accidentally releases them.
Spook Central calling Ecto-1.
Go ahead, Janine.
There's something freaky going on here.
What's wrong?
This whatchamadoodle says we're 3 ghosts short.
That's impossible. Nothing can escape that system unless it's shut down.
Hey, wait a minute. That's who those Ghosts or Us goons look like. The 3 class 5s we nailed this morning.
You're right, Peter. Who could forget faces like that?
But how did they escape?
Oh, no.
Somebody must have shut down the containment unit.
Slimer?
See, I knew I should have blasted him.
And so they're out, and they're able to put their evil plan in order.
You left out the part where he let them go while he was stealing food from the fridge.
He's that break room guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he is stealing their food from the fridge and then hides from Winston, who's like, I hear something. I should probably go investigate this. If nothing else, this particular episode, if not the whole cartoon, is an argument against allowing industries to self-regulate. I feel like if they had listened to the EPA or perhaps OSHA, then Slimer wouldn't have happened.
Well, in the original Ghostbusters, a lot of people made the point that Walter Peck, even though he was an asshole, was just doing his job.
Unlicensed nuclear accelerators, Scott.
Yes.
I mean, yes, I can understand. I can understand the fear there, and the Environmental Protection Agency has very much a vested interest in not having a small Chernobyl happen.
100%. But they made him the villain.
Yeah.
In that movie.
Well, just... and they wanted us to sympathize with Slimer in this cartoon, and they were like, wow, look at Peter. He's so mean to Slimer. And I'm like, no, him being mad at Slimer for releasing Ghost is the correct response.
It is the correct response. We're programmed. They want to program us to ignore the proper response to a problem.
They want us to like Slimer because he's the cute comedy relief. Womp, womp. But he's actually really just more of a problem.
He's actually the equivalent, and I'm going to make another old man reference. He's the equivalent to Gilligan on Gilligan's Island.
Oh, that's actually a reference I understand. I can also probably add Scrappy Doo to that.
Scrappy, oh God.
But am I wrong?
About wanting, about trying to make people like Scrappy?
Yeah.
Yes, you are 100% right.
And I mean, he's that character that they add. They're like, this person is so wacky and hilarious. Look at this guy. And no, I don't want to. Like,
no.
He's just making things worse, and I'm supposed to find it charming and cute. And I'm like, no, Slimer, the only good thing you ever did was release Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, who was so cool. But that's it. I mean, there's a backstory as to how he got out of the containment and became their sidekick. I don't remember it off the top of my head, which obviously means right now that there's like 10 nerds writing you a hate mail saying, she's not a Ghostbusters expert, so why is she even on here?
Just to throw this out there, in the original movie, well, he's never called Slimer in the movie,
no,
I don't
just
believe.
No, he's just, he slimed me.
And that was supposed to be John Belushi. That was Aykroyd's homage to his friend, John Belushi. So Slimer was supposed to be a ghost version of Belushi. Like from Animal House when he's shoving all the food in his face.
Yeah, and also, if I remember, didn't all the food fall through him too?
It fell through him on the floor. Yeah,
he's corporeal in this. He's actually able to keep and retain the food, which I always thought was really strange. He's like a sentient floating ball of slime instead of a ghost.
And I can see them. He's in there for the kids, the younger viewers.
I'm a kid, and I was a kid when I watched this, and I don't think I ever really cared about Slimer. I cared about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and I cared about the Ghostbusters, and I cared about Janine, and that was it. I don't think excising Slimer would have really, I mean, maybe their lives would have been easier, but there's so many stories you can tell about busting ghosts without having Slimer be the instigator.
What did you think about Janine in this episode?
Not enough Janine. I love Janine. I remember her being in the show super horny for Egon. Janine is more than that. She's awesome and she's snarky. And that didn't really come through. They did Janine dirty in this episode.
For future, do they ever bring the character, Rick Moranis' character of...
Louis Tully.
Is he ever brought into the cartoon?
Yes, later.
Okay. They didn't want to overload the first episode with characters.
Walter Peck also shows up too.
Okay. So they do stay close. But in this episode, it's just our... And what I liked about this episode is it wasn't a retelling of their origin. They're already established as Ghostbusters. Everybody knows who they are. I've always hated when reboot after reboot, we got to retell the Batman origin story. We know the Batman origin story. We got to retell the Spider-Man origin story. We know the Spider-Man origin story. So this episode, this first episode of the series is... I would say it's basically like 2 years in 86. So in the timeline, I don't know. Wow.
In the timeline, they've already saved New York twice.
Yes. I would say this probably in the timeline of Ghostbusters is, this probably happens after Ghostbusters 2 because they're free to, because right after the first one in the movie, they were shut down.
Right.
Even though these are the characters from the first movie, they're playing sort of loose.
It's also supposed to be an alternate universe timeline. So I don't know if it's really supposed to slot neatly into the movie canon.
So let me ask, what did you think of the ghosts in this one? The family of ghosts.
Okay. What I can tell you about the family of ghosts kind of ties back into what you said about how you were happy that this wasn't an origin story. Something that I like, too, is that the stakes were very localized. It would be very easy for a first episode to do an, oh my god, they have to save the entire planet! And then, what from there? So I liked that they kept it the threat localized to basically just a suspension bridge. And the path from the toy factory to the suspension bridge. I liked that the threat was something smaller that scaled itself a little bit throughout the episode. One of my favorite real Ghostbusters episodes was actually the one where they come across a door that says, "Do not open until doomsday." And it's an actual, like, apocalyptic scenario. I think the Necronomicon comes in. I want to say that there's an episode with, like, Lovecraftian horrors. And I like that they waited to tell those stories, to give some stakes, to heighten, as us comedy folks say, over time. So this was totally their beat one. And that's a good place to start, I think, especially for a show like this.
I think that's a very good point. And because actually the stakes in this episode is we got to save the business.
Yeah.
That's the stake. We're going out of business.
Right.
We can't pay the bills. That's the stakes in this one.
I like that.
I do too.
Because it gives the chance for subsequent episodes to be bigger. If you start off too big, where do you have to go?
That's always, as we as improvisers, that's true. If you start off at an 11, there's nowhere to go.
Right. Right. And that's what I felt about this. Interestingly, it was written by J. Michael Straczynski, who is a Spider-Man writer.
Oh, cool.
So he is definitely someone who knows his way around stakes and threats, both personal and global and universal.
And since you said it's an alternate universe, this may play into it. However, our characters are very much men of action in this.
It's at least a class 8 free-roaming vapor.
Worse, a full magnitude class 10.
Whatever it is, it's about to mash Manhattan into cheese spread.
Okay, boys, roundup time. Winston and I'll ride herd. Ray, you and Egon head him off at the pass with Ecto 2.
You got it!
All systems check?
Check.
Switching on power. Ready for launch.
All right. Let's kick some ectoplasm.
All clear behind us.
Prepare for launch.
Launch! Hey, Egon. Ever gotten around to taking those flying lessons?
No.
In the movie, they were just basically businessmen.
Well, that's because I don't think anyone thought when it came out that it was going to be as big as it was and end up spawning the need for alternate universes and adaptations. But given the format, that works for a movie. But, you know, post-Reagan... Or actually, mid-Reagan to post-Reagan, children's television is all about selling toys. So yeah, you're going to have that ghost copter. You're going to have men of action. You're going to have probably multiple iterations of the car because you want to sell the toys.
You want to sell the toys.
You
they have all that.
You want to sell the toys.
Because there's a scene in this episode where Peter Venkman is barking out orders. And I'm like, that's not Peter Venkman.
No, but you know who it is? It's my little brother and I sitting next to each other on his play mat, yelling.
Yes.
It's me yelling orders at him so we can go bust ghosts. That's exactly what it is. It is written like kids playing with action figures. That isn't to say that it isn't high quality. I enjoyed it. Aside from Slimer, if you take Slimer out, it's a great story. It's tightly packed. It's well paced. You know,
I agree, but it's like Peter. So Peter's like, you know, you guys get into the ghost copter, and at one point the Ecto One, he's driving it on two wheels through traffic. It was just like,
yeah.
that is not the Peter Venkman of the movie.
No,
so.
But that's Meredith Nudo and her Peter Venkman action figures.
It had more of a taste of Ghostbusters 2016, the end fight scene. It felt more like that movie than the 84 movie with the action and all that.
I can see that because, yeah, the 2016 version was significantly more action-packed and action-oriented than the original. I can see
it was.
I can definitely see that, which is probably why maybe I responded to it better than I think a lot of people did, was because that was my introduction to the Ghostbusters, were action men and action figures.
Well, you just made a very good point. If your introduction to the Ghostbusters is the 84 Ghostbusters, you're probably not going to like the 2016. However, if your introduction to the Ghostbusters is the cartoon, then you're probably going to like the 2016 version a lot better.
I mean, I like both versions for different reasons entirely.
Right.
But, I mean, I didn't have as big of a problem, and I think that's probably the linking, is because that my introduction to them were as action heroes and action figures. So naturally, I'm gonna associate Ghostbusters with action. I mean, it's interesting because I've seen the original more than I've seen literally anything else in the Ghostbusters oeuvre, as it were. But, you know, your imprinting, as it were, is what it is. And my imprinting was real Ghostbusters. It was also my introduction to concepts like the Necronomicon.
Now I can't enjoy the Evil Dead after I saw the Necronomicon on Ghostbusters.
No, I can always enjoy the Evil Dead. I have my own paperback copy of the Necronomicon because I love the idea that you can just walk into Barnes & Noble and buy it. Like the most dangerous book ever published, it's just, you know, available as a cheap $4 paperback at your local bookstore. You can buy it for like $2 used online.
Yeah, the shipping will cost more than the book.
Yeah.
And now let's take a break with a word from one of our sponsors.
I'm Miss B.
And I'm Miss W.
We're just a couple of anonymous teachers talking about BS in education.
BS in Education is a comedic podcast where we dig into what's really going on in our lives and our classrooms.
So if you're a teacher, have ever had a teacher, or are the parent of a child with a teacher, we've got the inside scoop you'll want to hear.
Join us this week on BS in Education.
And now back to the Dan Aykroyd podcast.
The episode is building to Slimer let these monsters out. They know a monster that lives in an abandoned toy factory, and they're going to go talk to him, and he wants to strike up a deal. It's just like, I'll talk to our friend. He'll let us catch him, and this will be the final nail in the Ghostbusters coffin. This will completely put him out of business. But when they get to the toy factory, it's a totally different monster. A monster with much more power than the monster that they were going to awaken.
And it killed the other monster.
It killed the other monster.
It killed the other monster. And it was very, very, very clear that it killed the other monster without having to say the dreaded K word that you can't say in children's television because people don't die in real life.
I said toy factory. This place is weird.
Look who's talking.
What are we doing here then, Pop?
Licking up an old friend here.
Yeah, Turlock's in there. He's the Class 7 Phantom who haunts this dump.
Class 7? Oh, well, that's a lot. But they're very powerful.
Right. That's why Turlock's gonna make those Ghostbusters run for the next state. Watch this. Hey, Turlock! It's me, Slug! Come on out! Come on, Turlock! We need you to do a first-rate haunting for us! Now that's great, Turlock, but we're not ready yet. Come on, Turlock, quit kidding around. Oh, wait a minute. Where's Turlock?
He's gone permanently. And have disturbed me.
No, because they were going to awake a level 7, but apparently this monster was a level 10.
Yeah.
I don't understand if the... I guess the monster just wanted to be left alone. the toy factory?
And
then, I mean,
Scott, if you lived in an abandoned toy factory, wouldn't you just want to sit in there and be left alone for the rest of your life?
I guess so, but after the family wakes him up, he gets so angry that he goes on a spree. He collects all these toys and turns himself into a giant toy through all these other toys. You know, it's sort of like a Transformer or one of those movies where a bunch of robots combine to make a giant robot. He combines all these old toys to make himself a giant evil toy.
Aw, he's just a toy Voltron.
A Toytron.
I would be that angry too. I would be like, you know what? If you're going to be like that, I'm just going to destroy everything.
But the monster...
That's a reasonable response.
I guess it would be a reasonable response. But the monster, it was talking in this hard-to-understand voice. I couldn't really catch what it was saying some of the time. I had to go back and listen to it again. It was this deep, gravelly voice.
Yeah, because it was meant to be juxtaposed against the soft and playful imagery of toys. They were playing with duality, Scott.
Wow, that Ghostbuster cartoon was ahead of its time.
And we were just saying it was meant to sell toys.
It was.
No, it was a kid's introduction to the postmodernist concepts of reversing binaries.
Well, this binary reverses itself through the city of New York. So the climax of the cartoon, it's set up as Slimer is going to redeem himself by helping capture this monster.
Yeah, but you know how Slimer would have redeemed himself is not letting them out in the first place.
Right, but that's totally... You see it in politics a lot, where people take credit of cleaning up a mess that they created. It's like, you don't get credit for doing it. You don't get credit... I burned the house, you know, it's like lighting your house on fire and then you put it, it's like, okay, it's all right. I put the house out.
Right. I mean, that's like, we're supposed to be like, oh, Slimer was the hero. And I'm like, maybe Slimer should have been more careful and not have been stealing food in the first place. Like, there was absolutely no consequences for Slimer's actions. Slimer was able to let the ghost go and then bask in the praise of defeating the big toy monster, and we're supposed to be okay with this? Like, whoa, look at that Peter Venkman. He's a big meanie to Slimer. And it's like, no, Peter had every right to be angry with him. And at the end, we're still supposed to think of him as someone who was just too hard on Slimer. And no, he wasn't too hard on Slimer. He was too soft because there were no consequences for Slimer's actions.
Well, no, the consequences were large portions of New York were destroyed. That was consequences.
But not consequences for Slimer himself.
No, not for him. No, Slimer is fine.
Other people had to suffer the consequences, and Slimer didn't even really get much in the way of a slap on the wrist.
So to set it up, Egon and Ray are in the ghost copter. The monster smacks it down, and Ray sets a self... They set it to detonate. So the monster trips and falls onto the... And the copter and the monster fall into the lake, and the explosion destroys the monster. So basically all Slimer did was... He left slime on a step, the monster tripped, and the monster basically destroyed himself.
Yeah. I'm not about Slimer getting off so scot-free.
But then after that happens, all four of the Ghostbusters are like, you did it.
And Peter Venkman's like, well, I was wrong about you, Slimer. And it's like, no, you weren't. No.
No, you were absolutely right.
No, just don't take it back. Like, no.
No.
No, the only time I will accept Slimer shenanigans is in the end credits. Because the end credits and the beginning credits are so fun and so well done. I love watching them put their little proton laser. Wow. another
they're
10,
proton packs.
They're proton packs, but another 10 nerds are now writing angry letters to you. Bringing their proton packs down in like quick succession in time with the music, and then in the end credits where there's a parade and they're dancing down the street and they're all synced up.
The end credits are basically they're copying the Ghostbusters music video from the first. It's sort of along those lines.
Yeah,
where they're
but
walking
I love
down
it.
The
and I love yeah. it. And then Slimer pops up and slimes the streets, and they all slip and fall at the very end. I like that. That's the only time Slimer has ever been redeeming is in the end credits. Slimer only works when Slimer is not in the actual story.
And at the end, it looks like he wraps himself around Vinkman's leg and drags him off screen. Like he's humping his leg or something
yeah,
like that. It's just
he also has a bad habit of like kissing people that aren't really into it, and I'm just like, oh god.
Well, that was one thing too. Sometimes when he kisses somebody, it's green, and then sometimes when he kisses somebody, it's clear. So sometimes it looks like when he kisses them, he leaves slime behind, and sometimes when he kisses somebody, it looks like he leaves saliva behind, human saliva.
Well, I mean, he looks like a giant floating wad of snot. He looks like he's just leaving snot everywhere. He's just a floating booger.
A floating booger.
He's a booger. He's just, no. Like, what was wrong with the Slimer from the movie? I liked the Slimer from the movie.
Less is more. Less is more.
Exactly.
If Slimer...
Exactly, and this is not even too much of a good thing because he only superficially shares characteristics with movie Slimer anyways.
Because Slimer in Ghostbusters 2, it's much worse because the Slimer was used perfectly in Ghostbusters 1.
That was all Slimer needed to be.
That was it.
Like...
Now, what did you think of the version of... Because the version of Ghostbusters in the cartoon... was not sung by Ray Parker Jr. Did you like the version of the theme song in this episode? Or in, I guess, all the episodes, but in the cartoon?
It's hard for me to not love the theme song. So, I mean, I'm an easy sell. It's a good theme song. Like, yeah, okay, Ray Parker Jr.'s is the best. Yay, but, I mean, I'm not going to turn my nose up at a banger when someone else does it. It's a good song.
And even though he didn't sing it, since he wrote it, Ray Parker Jr. got some money for that.
So I do have a very funny story about
okay,
the theme song.
Okay, let's hear it.
So again, remember my introduction to the theme song, or my introduction to all Ghostbusters, obviously, it was real Ghostbusters. So I had never heard the full theme song until... I was at a roller rink around Halloween time, and it was playing, and I was like, oh, man, it's Ghostbusters, oh, my God, because obviously that's what I sounded like as a child, and they got to the part where he sings about the invisible man sleeping in your bed, and that scared the ever-living shit out of me, and I started crying. And I was like always sleeping with a ton of stuffed animals around me in bed because the thought of someone like an invisible adult man slipping into my 4-year-old 5-year-old 6-year-old however old I was at the time child's bed in the middle of the night, that's terrifying, especially in the height of like stranger danger stuff and make sure to tell your mommy if the bad man touches you, you know, that terrified me. I was so scared.
Well, in the video, while Ray Parker is singing that, there's a woman in bed, and he slides out from under the bed and says, "An invisible man sleeping in your." And he's like, so he was like hiding under her bed. So,
but he was visible. But
he was visible.
That's the thing, though. It was terrifying to very tiny Meredith. The song doesn't scare me now. I love it. It's a great song.
It's a great song.
I love
it. It's a great song.
I have the context to understand what he's referencing, but when you are basically a like only barely out of your toddler years, yeah, that's going to be terrifying. I mean, remember, I was watching stuff like after school specials and things like that. So, you know.
Give us the timeline of your Ghostbusters. Cartoons, movies, the order that you saw them in.
Real Ghostbusters.
Okay.
My dad knew that we were watching a Ghostbusters cartoon. And he would sometimes watch it with us. And being a big Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis fan, he was like, oh my god, why have my children not watched the original Ghostbusters movie? So I watched that, I would say probably about 10? Age 10 maybe?
Okay.
Remember, I also had a younger brother, so he wanted us to be able to watch it kind of roughly at the same time. My youngest brother was born well after new episodes had been aired, so I think his first exposure to Ghostbusters actually was the movie. And then I don't think I ever saw Ghostbusters 2 until about high school or college. I read all of the IDW comics probably about 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
I saw the 2016 movie. I never watched Extreme Ghostbusters.
I've never seen that either.
Yeah,
I've never...
I wasn't interested in a Ghostbusters property that didn't have the original Ghostbusters that I knew and loved. So that was my timeline.
We're going to grade this episode, and then I'm going to have you grade the series. Was this a good kickoff to the Ghostbusters cartoon?
Yeah. No, I liked it. It was very well paced. It kept the spirit while also having to age it down for the audience that it was aiming at. I know that we have been cracking wise about it, but I do think that the writers did actually want to tell a very good story, even with producers being like, sell toys, sell toys. Like they did good storytelling. They didn't half-ass it at all.
This was a good story because, yeah, as I said, they could have rehashed the origin of the Ghostbusters from the movie, but they didn't.
And
they
also, started... again, after deregulating children's television, they could have just made a half-hour toy commercial, and they didn't. They told an actual story.
I know they had to put the stuff in with the helicopters and all that,
yeah, but they made it
turn
work.
Them into... They made it work.
Yeah, it was still organically folded into the story. I mean, yeah, they had to do it, but they definitely included it in the best way that they possibly could without making it seem as forced as the producers obviously made it. So, you know, writing for something like this is also not easy. We've talked about voiceover being hard, but so is writing.
Writing for an established property is hard to do.
Established IP, writing for people that don't know anything about writing for people whose only goal is to sell toys or to get commercials on the air, like, that's not easy. And so I'm not going to shout down the writers over it. I think they definitely did the best that they possibly could. And you could tell that they enjoyed, that there was still joy in what they wrote. They had fun in the story. I mean, maybe they didn't have fun writing it, but the final product was fine. I liked it. I know that Real Ghostbusters was on Netflix for a while, and I regret that I didn't fully watch it all like I wanted.
It's coming to YouTube.
Oh, good. Then I'll.
I saw an article where the Real Ghostbusters is coming to YouTube.
That's really good to hear, because I did want to do a full rewatch. The only stuff that I mostly rewatched was Cthulhu stuff. I watched the Doomsday episode, which is my favorite. Obviously, anything with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Obviously.
I don't know why I love the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man as much as I do. I went as him for Halloween one year, and I actually won a Halloween costume contest at work for that, which I was really proud of myself for. But no, I love Mr. Stay Puft, and I'm not sure why. I'm sure there's something that I need to talk to my therapist about, some stuff to unpack. Why do you love a giant marshmallow man?
Well, I know we mentioned this before, but was there any reason why they made Egon a blonde.
Yes, there was some likeness rights things with Harold Ramis.
Did Harold not give his right, not give permission to use his likeness?
I'm not sure what it was. That's all I'm aware of.
Okay.
You're going to have to talk to like an actual lawyer. All I did was just beat every Ace Attorney game. That's the closest I've come to passing the bar.
Which is odd because Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis' name are in the end credits.
Right. No, I don't know. It may, but at the same time, though, like, there's a difference between likeness rights and credits. He may have licensed his image elsewhere and there was a dispute. I don't know all the details. And again, that's 10 more nerds writing you angry emails. I'm sorry for all of these hypothetical angry emails that you're getting, Scott.
There ain't 10 people listening to this. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll listen. It'll just be me.
Listen to it 10 times and send me 10 angry emails.
Yeah, and three of my friends that are hardcore Ghostbusters and Dan Aykroyd fans. Like, that'd be it.
Well, how do you think, you know, Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis created these characters that people just love, and they've been around since 1984. And we were supposed to get a new Ghostbusters movie last year, but, you know, all the shit hit the fan.
Thanks, COVID.
That's just got to be a fantastic feeling. That you just created these characters that are now in, it's like Star Trek. It's like it's in the American, or probably worldwide. It's in our dialogue. You know, you mentioned Ghostbusters or you mentioned Proton Pack. People are going to immediately know what you're talking about.
You know why? Well, I mean, I think I know why. I think it's because they're such a consummate example of a well-balanced comedy group. You've got your straight man in Winston, because they would absolutely... Ghostbusters does not work without Winston. They need him to keep them grounded. They need that everyman outsider's perspective, where he's just like, look, I'm just in this for the paycheck, but I'm, you know, this is still fun. I love New York. Winston is one of the linchpins.
Yes.
Ray is one of the linchpins because he is the excitable tech nerd who we've discussed this on the show before, but one of Aykroyd's biggest talents is the ability to just spout off technobabble. And it's hilarious because his cadence with it is second to none. Like, no one does technobabble the way that he does it. And then you have his excitable counterpart in Egon, who is also the science guy. But he is the stoic science guy, the monotone science guy, the science guy who obviously loves what he does, but he's not as jazz handsy about it. So those two balance each other out. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got Peter, who is the smart ass. He's smart, but, you know, in the movie, he's kind of like the cad, the perv guy.
He's the con man.
He's a con man.
He's definitely... violating ethics by trying to sleep with his patients.
Oh, of course. Yeah, he's fat, but in the kids version, obviously, he's the smartass. He's the one that's going to say the things that the others think would be too mean. Like, he's the only one that chewed out Slimer because he was okay with being the bad guy. He was okay with being the mean one.
Slimer! I've been slimed!
Yuck.
Stand back. I'm going to blast him. This time I'm really going to...
Whoa, Peter, take it easy. I'll discipline Slimer. For shame, Slimer. You've been a naughty ghostie.
Naughty? Naughty? Come on, Ray. He's been a major pain. One more mess up, Slimer, and you're history. Got that?
But the chemistry falls apart without any of them. That's why I think people resonate so much with the characters as a group, because it's the interplay. It's the balance between them all. They are perfectly balanced.
That's why I'm interested in seeing this new one without Harold Ramis. I'm interested to see how it all works now.
I'm skeptical, but I'll still
I'm skeptical too, and I'm a little bit scared, but I'm also interested.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see it with an open mind for sure. And I will want it to do well because I never actively want things to be failures. I know that this probably will get me booted off the internet, but I don't like when I dislike something. I would rather things do well, and I would rather have more quality stuff out there than not, you know? It makes me sad when things suck. So, like, yeah, I have fun ripping apart bad movies with my friends because, you know, I grew up on MST3K on top of a lot of other things, but it doesn't mean that a part of me is not a little sad, you know?
Well, it depends. It's hard to really, when something's really bad, but the people behind it were really sincere, that's hard to take. But if, like Sharknado, there's no soul to that movie. It was just all money. I mentioned this in a previous podcast. I did My Stepmother is an Alien, and it's a bad movie. And my friend who I was doing it with said, was this the worst movie that you've ever done? And I go, no, the worst movie was I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. There's no soul to Chuck and Larry. They just threw whatever was up there on the screen to make money. My Stepmother and Alien is, I felt like you, I felt bad for it because I believe the people behind it were genuinely trying to make a good movie. It just didn't happen. I did not feel bad. I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry being bad. I felt nothing for that movie.
See, that's the thing. I think it's worse for a movie to be boring than bad.
What was the cartoon series on a whole? It was on for like 8-9 years. It was on for quite a while. 7 years, I believe it was. 86 to 93, I believe.
Yeah, but and then it was in syndication for longer than that.
I'll probably check out more episodes after watching this one with in mind, hoping that there's less Slimer. That's what I'm going
there's
to say.
Not
I just
be
wish
less.
This episode.
There's not,
not?
Be less
okay.
Slimer. No. They got too many Slimer plushes to sell.
Or the Ecto cooler.
That might actually be one of the reasons why I don't like Slimer is that we were talking about a well balanced comedy quartet. The addition of Slimer throws off the balance that they have.
Well, yeah, it's like, the Marx Brothers doing their thing, and then all of a sudden this bumbling idiot just comes crashing in. It's
right.
Like you're ruining what the Marx Brothers are putting together.
It's not the Four Stooges.
No.
So, I mean, that's probably, I think, maybe one of the reasons, too, why Slimer doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't work. It would be like, if the Marx Brothers were doing the Marx Brothers are very verbal comic. Well, they're verbal, but they're not slapsticky. There's physical humor there. But that would be the Marx Brothers doing a scene, and then Mo from the Three Stooges comes in and starts slapping them.
Those
are two different genres. The Ghostbuster Slimer is very, very slapstick, and the Ghostbusters are very verbal. The puns and, you know, and play on words. That's
right.
That's being a smartass.
Yeah.
That's where all their comedy comes from. And then this to put a slapstick on top of that. So that's the way I look at it. If you put Mo in the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Slimer works in another show, but I don't. It's Real Ghostbusters is not that other show.
No. It is not. But I enjoyed the cartoon.
Yeah.
I would suggest that you check out the cartoon. As I said, I believe the Real Ghostbusters is going to be coming out on YouTube, so you'll be able to catch all the episodes on there.
I'm looking forward to it.
What do you want to promote there, Meredith?
Me?
Promote you. Where can we find you?
Yes. My Twitter is @MeredithNudo, MEREDITH, Nudo, NUDO. That's where you'll probably get all the updates on what I'm working on. I have some voiceover stuff that's in the pipeline that hasn't been officially announced, but It will be eventually, and you can find out there where it is. My demo reel is there too, if you're looking to hire. I do the bumper segments on this show. My website is hardcorenudoty.com, hardcorenudoty.com. And there, actually, every week I write about what I've been reading. I want to start writing more for it, but right now the people that pay me to write for them get priority for obvious reasons. So once I have a little more free time, I'll be throwing up maybe some more comedy, some media crit pieces. But for the time being, I don't have any shows because thanks COVID. I'm not as ancient as Scott, so I haven't been vaccinated yet, so I can't leave the house.
Well, I haven't been vaccinated either because I live alone and I'm in relatively good health, so...
Oh, I'm getting, as soon as it opens to the general public on Monday, I am going to be one of the people flooding the internet or the phone lines. I want to leave the house. I miss being on stage. I miss doing shows. So obviously I have no shows to promote or schedule. I miss being able to perform with you. We haven't been able to work together on anything because thanks COVID, that hit shortly after your comedy special even.
Right, yes.
So we haven't been able to do anything. You know, I want to be able to get back to making stuff. I don't really have the equipment to make anything super high quality at home, so I haven't been doing stuff at home. I did build a voiceover booth, though, which is why I'm pushing my voiceover stuff so hard, because...
I would put all your contact information in the description of this podcast.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I am for hire. My only reel that's out right now is my character reel, but I'm getting started on my commercial reel next month, which is in a week, so that's exciting. I do voiceover work, I do writing, and I do editing. I've edited comic books, even. I've published some short stories here and there. I write about food for Houstonia magazine sometimes, but there hasn't been a lot to write about because thanks COVID. But I found a couple stories that I have pitched, so we'll see if my editor gets back to me. So yeah, I'm not as active as I used to be because thanks COVID, but I will be. I will be, and you can find out from those websites. My public-facing Facebook is also Hardcore Nudoty. If you're into photos of my neighbor's dog and my cat and flowers, Meredith Nudo is also my Instagram.
Look up Meredith on any one of these sites. If you need to hire her, hire her.
Yes, I have a booth. I have my own voice. Because booth, and I built it.
That's right. After we sign off of this podcast, the next voice you're going to hear is going to be Meredith doing the end bumper.
Yeah, that was recorded before I built my booth. So if you ever need me to update that, let me know.
I will. And that is it. So thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I would like to thank my guest, Meredith Nudo.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I'm going to do all of these until you let me watch regular Ghostbusters.
Uh-huh. We can see how long we can drag this out. All right.
I'm so...
And that's... Go ahead. Let your anger out on me.
I'm so comedically frustrated.
I'm comedically shaking my hand at the microphone.
I actually am. My cat's behind me howling, too. He's in on the anger.
All right, that's it. And we'll see you next time here on the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
Ghostbusters! Each sold separately.
See any ghosts? Not yet. Pigman, it's back to the bone. Get me out.
Looks like you're really into him, Stan.
Zaplum!
Safe. Not so safe. It's Slug Bucket.
What a slob.
I've been gooped.
Activate the
Ghostbusters!
We ain't
afraid of no ghosts! Peter Venkman, Bad to the Bone, and Sludge Bucket with Ectoplasm sold separately. Ghostbusters from Canada.